Hey everybody, today Rotto runs through his top 10 filler games, part 2. And what do I mean by that is, about 5 years ago, I got on camera and decided to tell you at that time what were the 10 games that if we have a few minutes to kill, my wife Jen and I would like to play. And at the time, I freely admitted that this is a list that could be going under a lot of flux, because at any given time, filler games, they almost kind of feel almost incidental. They come and they go. They're like trending fashion. Sometimes we're excited, sometimes we're done with that because a filler game you tend to play a lot and maybe burn out on, and then you're happy to see it again in a few years. So, 5 years later, I thought it'd be fun to make a new list, and the first thing I'm gonna say is this is 10 completely new games, and it in no way invalidates my old list, which if you want, you can hit that eye up in the top right corner of the screen and go check it out. So really, I'm bringing you 20 great filler games, I think. But I am not going to be doing it alone, because I have brought the Filler Friday people themselves. It's Before You Play. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi.
Hello. It's Monique and Naveen. Mm-hmm. You are a young married couple, and mm-hmm. your channel on YouTube does a bunch of really great varied stuff. If you haven't checked them out, links to their channel will be down in the show notes. And again, you can hit that eye in the top right corner screen. They do a lot of stuff, including, I don't know how long you've been doing, every Friday, like clockwork, you have another filler. You sit down and you actually play through it, and then you give like a little mini review.
We do love them. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was because of that. It was because of that I thought, well, I have to bring them on. Although, Monique will admit, there was a bit of a miscommunication, because when I first reached out to her, I said, hey, I'm going to be doing a top 10 heavy. I'm going to be doing this filler thing coming up. Would you guys like to jump on? And they said, oh my gosh, we'd love to do heavy. We love heavy games.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Jessica Cassidy from Heavy Cardboard responded like 10 minutes before them. And so I had to come back and say, I'm sorry. He's gone. Do you still want to do the filler? Said, okay, oh, fine, we'll do that. We will.
Yeah.
But I mean, you guys are the filler. But I mean, so that's really interesting. I mean, so you guys love fillers.
We do.
But I mean, your natural predilection, what would be your number one heavy game? Just so that we can retroactively get that top 10 heavy game out of the way. Because I know that's what you really want to do until Heavy Cardboard muscled in and stole your slot.
Do you know yours off the top of your head?
I think I know yours off the top of my head.
Okay, yeah. Go.
Okay, hers is Lisboa.
Yes.
For sure. 100%. Vitalis is Lisboa.
Yeah.
That is heavy duty.
Yes.
I love Vitalis. It would probably be between Lisboa and On Mars, but I would have to say Lisboa.
Yeah.
Because Vitalis sort of.
And it's
all
probably
right.
The same one for me. It's Lisboa. We both love that game.
Oh, you cheated.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, well then there you go. That's their number one. The other nine, who cares? Everybody just wants to know about the number one. But you're going to have to wait for the countdown on the fillers. And before we get to the countdown, we actually did talk a little bit before we started, which is unusual for me because I'm the height of unprofessionalism. It turns out they're very professional. Except it turns out, I love you guys are actually married and you're really joined at the hip and at the ear because they couldn't get their Bluetooth working today.
We couldn't.
C'est la vie. But no, I think that's adorable. I think everybody's going to love it. Everybody's done it. I've done it on planes several times with my wife. And we both, I think, had some honorable mentions. I have one very specifically that I wanted to call out, although I need to reopen Notepad.
Okay.
There it is. Yes. So, I mean, I could easily have, I mean, this took me a long time to break it down to 10, because it wasn't as easy as just saying, well, what are my 10 games that are fast playing that I rank the highest? And that's not it. I mean, some games I've played too much and some games I really want to play more. So this is my current snapshot. And there was one game that it kills me I can't put on this list. I'd probably put it in the top three. It's Nanga Parbat from Steve Finn, Dr.
Yes.
Finn Games. The thing is, the reason I'm not putting it on the list is it's not available in retail.
It's not
yet.
Out yet.
I covered it. Did you guys cover it too, I think?
We're going to, actually.
We haven't played it yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So that's, we're excited
now. You might
now.
Have my copy. You might have my copy as it happens, because I had it for about a week. During that week, my wife and I, we played it like almost a dozen times. We loved it so much.
Wow.
And then I just did a little bit of filming and sent it on. So 5 years from now, Nanga Parbat might make my, because I'd actually have a real copy of it. But for now, I mean, I always call Steve Finn the king of the fillers. And it'd be a shame for me not to have a Steve Finn game. And Nanga Parbat is amazing. But because it's not available to folks yet, I'm leaving it off the list for now. Sorry, Steve. And you said you guys have some honorables as well, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yes, we okay. do.
Hit me.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah,
go first?
You go for it.
Okay, so mine.
Oh, you both have them. Okay.
We both have
we
one.
We do.
Yeah. So mine is a game called The Little Prince, Make Me a Planet. Are you familiar with it?
Really?
Yeah.
Specifically, I've never played it. Make I'm familiar with it.
Specifically, Make Me a Planet. It's a slight cutthroat, I split, you choose game where you're basically building up this planet and you're trying to get these different scoring parameters. And on the tiles, they have certain things that if you're overexposed, you lose out on the points that you were building towards.
Yeah.
So you kind of put your opponents in these situations where it's like, well, which poison would you like to take of these two tiles? And so
it's very cute, it's cute looking. You're trying to build a planet, but it's so mean, especially at like three or four player, because it's probably like the epitome of hate drafting.
Right, right.
All in a filler game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting too. I mean, what is the grouping? I'm really interested because I've never played this, and I've been familiar with it for a long time. How many things are you splitting in, or you know, splitting and then choosing between? Is it like a bundle of five things that you have to split into three bundles?
There
or
are
what?
Four stacks, and the stacks have to do with the different parts of the planet. So, like one stack might be all the corners of the entire. I think it's 4x4
or something.
4x4
or something like that. Yeah.
And so, when it's your turn, you choose a stack, and you put out a certain amount of tiles based off the number of players.
Right.
And then you get to choose who gets to go next.
Yes.
So these people are trying to take, you know, the tiles that are going to benefit you the most.
Right.
Yeah. But it's that the entire time. It's really interesting.
See, I mean, and I'm surprised that turns out to be a filler because in my experience, there is very little in the board game industry that is more analysis paralysis inducing than I split, you choose. Is that the case for this one or is it pretty snappy?
It's pretty snappy,
It's
though.
Pretty snappy. Yeah. The decisions are so... The decisions that you're making are very simple.
Right.
So it's like, it becomes pretty obvious, like, really quickly which one you should take.
Right.
But, so it's just about picking your poison and who are you going to make angry with?
Game time altogether, like, 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's very fast.
Not too bad.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds fillery. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, by the way, my lack of professionalism shines through again. For me, we actually talked about this before we got on. I was considering anything on the list that my wife and I can get to the table, played, put back in the box, and back on the shelf in under 30. Which really means the games themselves are, like you said, around 20-ish for the actual gameplay, or maybe less. Right. I would imagine you guys are kind of in the same boat.
Yeah, we did 30 minutes or less for gameplay.
For gameplay,
yes.
Majority of the stuff on the list, though, are quite short.
Yes.
So,
All right.
Yeah.
Including that one. All right, your... So that's your number 11.
That's
number
11, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we're doing a top 11 today.
Because that game can make enemies.
Yes,
so that's
it
why
can.
It's an 11.
My honorable mention didn't actually make our list for one reason, and it's because only half of us like this game. And it's called Fantasy Realms. And it's basically...
Yes!
Yes. I like Fantasy
Always
Realms.
Bet on Monique, folks. Fantasy Realms is a great little game. There is something wrong with Naveen.
I don't know what
there
it is.
Thank you. Oh my goodness. It's so fun. You're curating your hand. It's really fast because you're only trying to build up... I think you only play until like maybe 10 cards are out on the table.
Something like that.
And then the game trigger just ends and you're just stuck with the hand that you have. And it's fun because you're literally curating a hand and some cards will cause the other cards to not score points.
It's the contradiction. That's like,
So you're trying to find like which combination of hands is going to score me the most number of points. And so making that is really
fun. Okay, so you don't have a problem with the design, Naveen. You're just saying it makes your brain trip in a way that you find less satisfying.
That's exactly it. That's totally
I guess I could see that.
He hates the negate.
Because it is a great little game.
Of points he's earned. Yeah. So
I can see why people like it. For sure.
And that was another reason I contacted you guys about this originally, because I saw you talking, I think, Monique, about this somewhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay, I mean, if I just have to get this Naveen guy on for him to explain himself, because Fantasy Realms is very, very good and criminally overlooked. I think it was AEG, if I recall correctly.
I think it was WizKids. Yeah.
Maybe WizKids, I think.
What was it?
I think WizKids.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, there
so.
You go. There's the beginning of my criminal overlooking of it. I can't remember the publisher put it out. But it's
we could
a sharp
be wrong.
Little game, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's neat.
Okay. Well then, we got that out of the way. Are you ready for an actual countdown of your top 10?
Alrighty
then, I will get going. Unless you guys would like to get going, you are the guests. I didn't think about this either.
I think maybe...
Show us the way.
Show us the way.
Okay, well then I will start with my number 10, which is a relatively new game called Ankhor. A-N-K-H-O-R. And if you're not familiar with it, this game is from Space Cowboys, and it's really weird. It's almost like Space Cowboys is trying to kill Splendor, which is also from Space Cowboys. This game has such a Splendor vibe. Yes. It's an easy, quick little 15-minute filler, at most, Jen and I find. And you know, a big part of the game is drafting, or you know, grabbing sets of these wonderful, great-feeling little poker chips, just like Splendor. Although they're mini chips, they're about half the size of Splendor chips, but they're adorable. Mm-hmm. And then the other half of the time is using them as currency, not to grab cards to make an engine like Splendor, but instead to grab tiles to do a bunch of tile-laying, pattern-building, point-scoring stuff. And we are really enamored of this game. I love tile-laying games. I love you know, wonderful-feeling poker-chippy type things. And the coolest stuff about the tile-laying is you're not only laying outward, but you can stack on top as well to enhance the set collection of it. And it's very sharp. It almost sounds like you guys have played it. Are you?
I have.
I think I played it once at PAX, right?
Oh, you played it? Yes, okay. Yeah. I can't remember if you were playing with me. But yeah, we played at PAX Unplugged this past December. And yeah, I agree. It felt similar to Splendor, except for that bit, that like kind of building part of it.
And the game ends at the right time. It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Really, yeah. Very, very quick. It's a quick race. And yeah, I mean, yeah, the Splendor elements of it, the grabbing of tiles, you know, is satisfying. It's super fast building up. I can see what you've got. Oh, are you going for that thing?
Yeah.
There's a really nice little setup mechanism it has that varies the values of the different resources you can collect. Everything about it is super sharp. And, well, like, I don't know, I wonder if there's going to be a common thing, because I think everything we've talked about so far has kind of flown under the radar. They don't really catch people's eyes because people aren't as excited about fillers.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. I think that's probably what it is.
Yeah.
Fillers just don't catch the same kind of excitement, I think, for a lot of people.
It is very rare.
But they're so fun.
That, you know, they scream up the hotness.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Okay. Well, what's your guys? And by the way, also, you guys presumably had to duke it out. I mean, you've already had one huge schism, but you are doing a combined top 10, right?
Yes.
It's not like it's your top 5 and her top 5 and you're bouncing back and forth.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
We've agreed on each one of these titles.
Exactly. Yeah. So where it sits is kind of where it was like, well, okay, I think maybe this one could be there, this one could be here.
Yes.
And that was more where we kind of duked it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot of action.
All right.
Yep. Cool.
So, well, let's see who won with number 10.
All right, I'll say the number 10 right here. So our number 10 is actually the oldest game on our list. It is the game that plays the most amount of players also, and it is Six Nymphed. So Six Nymphed.
Oh, sure.
Have you played it? Yeah.
No, I have not.
You never played it? Oh, yeah. Okay, so it's a
That's
game.
That's too old for me.
It's from like 1994.
94,
yeah.
So it plays up to 10 people, and it's basically a game where you're trying to score the least amount of points. The game will last a course of 10 rounds, and it's basically a deck of cards, and the cards are numbered from 1 through 104. So if you play with the full complement of players, every single card is going to be in play in the game. And basically what's going to happen is there are four rows of cards that are going to be built up. At the very beginning of the game, each row has just one card in it, randomly. Every player has 10 cards, and on your turn, you will simultaneously play just one card from your hand, face down, and then reveal it at the same time. And what you're going to be doing
is... And there's the filler, because everybody's playing.
It's very
boom, boom, boom.
It's very quick. It's just 10 rounds. It's simultaneous play. And then when everybody reveals their hand, it's going to be a bunch of numbers that you have to now place in that middle area on the table.
Yep.
You have to place them in ascending order.
In ascending
order, the reason why it's called Six Nymphed is because if you ever play the sixth card in that row, you now must take the entire row into your scoring pile. So that's the part that's like really kind of exciting, because you never know quite when you're going to be the one to take a row.
Right.
And it's always like surprising and unfortunate all at the same time.
Yeah, it's also nice when you think you're going to be the one to take it, but somebody slipped a card right before you and then they become the sixth person clearing out the row. And now you're just the first person on that same row. So there's a lot of like kind of like...
It's quite chaotic, so it's a nice like icebreaker as well if you're like in a big group and you just need something to kind of get everybody warmed up for game night. Mm-hmm. So we really enjoy that one. It's a small box, like really tiny, so you can travel with it as well.
Well, you guys do a lot of couples gaming. How is it as a two-player game? I mean, it sounds like you need more players to make this thing real.
Yeah,
I think
engender that excitement level.
A true sweet spot for me is about 5 or 6 for this game. We have played a full 10.
10 is
that's really chaotic.
Wow,
but I think 5 or 6 is perfect.
Yeah. 10 is like you almost can't strategize It's all about, like, mitigating the chaos, I guess.
It depends on what other people are holding and what combination of cards they're holding, what they're holding back.
So, sweet spot is probably, like, 5 or 6, I would say. But definitely not at 2.
Well, that'd be why I've never played it.
Yeah.
But, all right. Yeah, but, I mean, I do know. I mean, I've heard about it forever. I know it's super popular, super well-loved. So, I think, I'm sure there are plenty of people saying, yeah, that's a total no-brainer. You're number 10, 6, Nimpt. Mm-hmm. Although, unfortunately, you really missed a trick by not making it your number 6.
So. I know.
First fail.
It was part of
did
the,
you discuss it?
It was part of the battle.
You know, we didn't. That's a missed opportunity, for sure.
We have to give them a real 10.
Okay, I'm going to be curious about this across the board then. This one came in at number 10. Did you guys agree with that, or did one of you think it should be higher?
I think we did agree with this one, right?
We were both instantly like, this is 10.
Yeah.
It's great, but
all right,
it's 10.
Then,
yeah.
All right, then we're on to number 9. My number 9 is Fugitive, which is a 2-player only game. It's an asymmetrical game where one player is the fugitive, think Harrison Ford from the movie, and the other player is Tommy Lee Jones from the movie, the marshal trying to hunt them down. And it's a fairly abstract card game as well, with gorgeous card art. And you know, every round, the fugitive has a deck of cards that the cards range from 0 to 42. And for the fugitive to escape, they have to be able to play a subsequent series of cards that are rising in value until they hit 42, which means they escaped. But they're playing cards face down. The marshal is trying to guess what cards they have played. And on the marshal's turn, they always get to peek at, they get to remove more and more cards from the deck so they know, oh, you know what? I know there isn't a 32. I know there isn't a 16. I know there isn't a 12. And you just were at 10, and you've made your jump forward. I know you can't be at 12. Are you at 13? Or are you at 11? And it's just all mind games for a good, solid 15 minutes of incredibly fast-paced fun. Both sides are incredibly fun to play. I think at first glance, most people think it's more fun to be the fugitive because you've got multiple cards, you're setting up plans and trying to, you know, kind of lay traps because you can play multiple cards to bluff and make you think, oh, we've moved extra spaces, but we really haven't, you know, stuff like that. But the... it's really satisfying to be the marshal because you actually have a little dry erase board and a pen and you're taking notes and you can just feel the noose tightening around your prey as you get closer and closer. And it feels like no matter what, whoever wins, it always comes up close to the end. And it's just, for a simple deck of 42 cards, plus it comes with some cool little events you can add in if you want. I mean, there's just an incredible amount of theme in this game, and I'm very impressed by the Fugitive, or just Fugitive.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Who's the publisher
it's
of that?
I think it's a Fowers.
Fowers game, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So that's a really stressful one.
Yeah, that one's stressful.
Now, do you have an opinion as to which role you think is easier to win with or harder?
My answer would be whichever role Jen is playing. Actually, you know what? No, that's not true. It's interesting. Normally, we were joking about this before we started. I think Naveen and I are both live in a world where we lose to our spouses more often than we win. But we're happy to keep playing.
Yeah.
It is interesting. I have found that in general, my wife has a really hard time with bluffing games. Mm. And I have an incredibly easy time second-guessing her.
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to bluff? No, I know that's not a bluff. I know that's a real card. Because somehow I can just intuit it. And most of the time I get... And it is a bit frustrating for her. And it is actually one of the things I appreciate about this. That, like I said, there are these event cards. And if there is one side... I mean, it's almost an immaterial question. Because if you believe, as a group or as a couple, that one side is better than the other, you can put in events cards to the deck that only help one side or the other. Mm-hmm. So you can actually tweak the balance. If you think it's just impossible to ever win and everybody agrees, well, then make the marshal stronger. Put in marshal events. And I think that's a brilliant way to go. Yeah, I'm going to assume Tim did his math, did his numbers, and it probably works out. It to me, it feels like the marshal, at first glance, is harder.
Yeah.
Because you're reactive. You're not proactive. You're not in control. And you are having to navigate a maze that the fugitive has created for you. But on the flip side, though, you ultimately have all the power. You're the one that's just pulling cards left and right. I think it's brilliant. And I guess you guys have played it, right?
We have, yeah. Monique is very elusive in that game.
It was hard. I mean, it took us a few plays of it to kind of get the gist of what you're supposed to do, I think. But it's really good. It's really, and you're right, the artwork is stunning. Like, they did a really good job.
Yeah, it tells a great story.
It does, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, and it's fun to kind of see all of the locations, like when you lay out all the cards, it tells a story.
Yeah, it tells
a
story, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So.
Yep, yep, yep.
Really neat.
All right, well, that's my number nine, Fugitive. What do you guys got?
Okay, so I think I'm doing number nine.
Yeah, you're number nine.
Our number nine is it's actually an abstract game. It might be the only abstract game on our list.
Maybe.
But it's a
what
game.
What was Six Nipped then?
That's true.
Hand management.
Yeah, hand management.
Truly hand management. Press your luck.
Okay, yeah, yeah. All right.
Good luck.
So this game is called Saikatsu, and I believe it's a game by IDW, and it was actually re-implemented recently into Saikatsu at Pets Life, mm-hmm. just for like a more family-friendly version. But in this game, it plays 2, 3, or 4, and each mode is a little bit different. Like if you play the 2 or 3-player game, it's competitive. And if you play the 4-player game, it's teams. But basically, you're placing these tiles out onto the board. And I believe it's just like one big circular board.
Yep.
And the tiles have birds and different colors of birds and like flowers, different colors of flowers around them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you place the tile out, you score points immediately for the same colored birds that it's touching. But at the end of the game, you're also going to score points for each row of same colored flowers that are pointing in the direction of your own personal vantage point.
Yeah, from like your perspective. Like
right, so there are like three different towers on different parts of the board, and you're supposed to select one to start the game, and that is your vantage point. And so
this is a communal area then. Everybody's laying to the same board.
Exactly. Mm-hmm,
exactly. And it's interesting.
And so you're trying to get points along the way, but also going for that big end score.
Yes, exactly. Because the end game scoring is much larger than the mid game scoring. And that's important because when you're laying out your tiles, you're also laying out tiles for other people's vantage points.
Right.
So you don't want to give them those end game scoring. So you're having to think of both at the same time.
Exactly.
And it plays really quickly. And it's really like thinky. Everybody's like really involved when we're playing it. So that's fun.
You can see an opportunity in that moment maybe to score 4 or 5 points. But if you place that mm-hmm. tile technically in the wrong spot, you're then setting up somebody else's scoring track.
For the end game.
Because it's technically all the same board. It just depends on your perspective relative to other people's.
Yeah. So have you played that one or?
No, I'm not. You're going to have to tell me how to spell it for when I set this video up. I've never even heard of it.
Saikatsu.
But I have to admit, we tend to avoid abstracts. Although this sounds like a typical bird flower field simulator.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
I mean, of course. That's how birds and flowers work. They score at the end or at the beginning. Yeah. It's a bird in the hand versus two in the flower.
There you go. Apparently. Exactly. And in the 4-player game, it's fun because you're sitting across from your teammate. You know, it's a typical like a team play. And so you're really trying to not mess it up for your teammate. Right. So...
Is that how you like it best?
I think I like it best at 3, where everybody for themselves, everybody has their own vantage point. That's my personal opinion.
I agree also, only because at 3, now you're looking at all 3 vantage points. Mm-hmm. You're taking into consideration all 3 of them, as opposed to the 2-player or the team game where you only have 2 of them in play.
Yep.
So the decisions are a little bit harder.
Yeah, it's kind of like, clearly I'm not going to put this for your vantage point, so I'll just tuck it away. Versus in a 3, it's like,
all
I'm 3 kind of helping sides. Both of you guys here.
So. Yeah. And that is our number 9.
Well, that's cool. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you guys are here because I've never heard of it, but it does sound... I mean, and it's a 2-player game.
It can't...
Yes.
It.
Yes. Yeah, the 2-player game is great.
Very good, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You give it a thumbs up.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. And were you guys once again simpatico? You both looked at this and said, of course, this is our 9.
Yeah, yes. I think so. Mm-hmm.
I would say so, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All righty. Are you guys going to be simpatico the whole way?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Then I will keep asking.
Yeah, keep asking, yeah.
All right. Okay, well, that was number 9, and I'm not even going to try and say it. How do you say it again?
Saikatsu.
Yeah, we assume, Saikatsu. Actually. We're assuming it's pronounced that way.
Yeah.
But I think it is.
Saikatsu.
Saikatsu.
Publishers, put pronunciation guides in your rule books.
Yeah,
just
really
think
helpful.
Of the board game reviewers, if nothing else. Think about it. It's hard. Yeah.
It's true.
All right, cool. All right, number 9, Saikatsu. All right, my number 8 is the newest game on the list. And I almost didn't put it on because I don't think it's actually widely available yet. But it is coming very, very soon. And you can get it, I think, mail order direct from the publisher. I just put a run-through up for it a week ago or so. It's Cafe.
Oh, okay.
And so I assume you guys don't know it. Like I say, it's brand spanking new. It's from a relatively new publisher, Pythagoras, I believe. And they're really up-and-comers. I've actually got a bunch of their games. I've played them all. I'm covering a lot of them this month. But anyway, Cafe is a game. It's a card game in the same genre as Honshu.
Mm.
You know, or...
Hokkaido.
You know, Cards City, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
Hokkaido. Yep. You know, that idea of laying cards on top of each other and partially obscuring cards, which...
Ooh.
I don't really know, has a title yet for that particular. I've seen on Board Game Geek they referred to as splaying games because you're splaying these things all over the place. But that doesn't really work because splaying is like an old, I think, trick-taking term of just like moving cards left, right, and center. So I have heard some people refer to them as patching, like card patching games. You're patching all these cards together. Mm-hmm. And here's the deal. We are in kind of a card patching renaissance right now. I feel like I've covered a half a dozen of them this year so far. And Cafe, I think, is the most impressive of all of them I played. Because what is usually the case in these style games? Like, you guys have played Honshu Hokkaido, and I'm sure you've seen a few other ones. Normally, you're just trying to stack all these cards, and there's rules about can you put them above, can you put them below, how many things can you cover, and all of that. But at the end of the day, you're just trying to create certain patterns, trying to make sure certain things are next to other things to score points. And that, to a certain extent, exists in Cafe as well, but not that's a secondary thing. Cafe is an engine-building game. And as I'm laying all these cards out, every turn I get a new card, I try to patch it together with all the other things to make the ideal patterns of icons and whatnot. But then, this actually represents my little coffee bean industry, which includes growing the coffee beans, roasting them, and shipping them off to cafes around the world. And so, I run my engine. So not only am I just trying to patch all these cards to get the most icons front and center, but I'm also trying to make a really efficient engine that with one action can harvest as many beans as possible, or roast as many beans as possible, or dry as many beans as possible. And as you might imagine, that proves very difficult to do. You can make a little organization that's amazing at growing beans, and you can grow dozens of them, but they don't do any good if you've only got one field to dry them out, and then that becomes a bottleneck. It all comes back to every round, I get one card, I've got to slip it in here, and you know what? I really need this roaster, because it's killing me not having any roasters. But the only place I can put it covers up half of my bean fields, and I have to throw all those beans away. So there's this extra level of tension above and beyond the other games in this genre by melding this card patchwork style gameplay with a genuine engine builder, which I don't think I've seen anywhere else. These are always just about making patterns and scoring points. But here you're building an engine and you can see it. It's a very clever game, and it wouldn't be on this list if it wasn't super duper fast. I mean, Jen and I get this game done in under 20 minutes because it's just six rounds. You're just going to take six cards every round, grab a card, run your engine, and try to score as many points as possible. Gotcha. Really sharp. My number eight, Cafe, and I'm sure you guys have not seen it yet.
No, that sounds really interesting. Like, that sounds like right
I'm really impressed by it. Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, definitely keep an eye out for it.
An engine builder that plays less than 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yes, awesome. You're right. Actually, that's a unique selling point for them as well. Totally. Normally, engine builders, it's got to be an hour because the first half hour is just slowly building the thing. Right. This one, you're up and running super fast. It's really great.
Awesome.
Wow, that's really cool. Let's look out for that one.
All right.
So,
yeah.
You do number eight?
You want me to do number eight? Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Number eight is a game called Schotten Totten. So,
it's a two-player only. Yeah,
two-player only game where you're basically... I don't know, what is the theme?
So
here?
It's a re-implementation of Battle Line,
yes.
So Battle Line is probably the one that people
are most... Is Schotten Totten a re-implementation of Battle Line, or is Battle Line a re-implementation of Schotten Totten?
You know, I think
Schotten Totten is newer, is what I've...
Oh, is it? Okay.
It could be.
It's what I've heard. Now I'm second guessing that.
I don't know.
But I think it was Schotten Totten.
Well, you know what it is? It's because... I think it was originally Schotten Totten, and then it got repurposed into Battle Line and made more militaristic. But then Schotten Totten got a new re-release.
Yes. Oh,
I think that's
what it is. Yeah.
That sounds very convincing.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
But none of that matters, because why is it on your list? Why does it make your number eight?
Okay. So this is a two-player only game.
Yeah, two-player only game.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah, it's a two-player only game. Have you played it before?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've not played Schotten Totten. I have played Battle Line, and that's going to be my question: is what are the differences? But first, tell me what you like.
Okay, so basically there are nine stones. Like, what are they?
Yeah, like, they're like
mystery stones that you're trying to win.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you're playing these poker hands to each individual stone. And so basically the ultimate thing in the game is you want to try to outmaneuver your opponent in terms of which poker hands you're playing down. Because once you've committed to playing a card to a stone, you're trapped there. Mm-hmm. And so you're trying to curate a hand so that you can have the best hand in front of that stone so that your opponent cannot compete.
So you're basically playing cards in front of these stones. And once both sides have like three cards laid out and there's a clear person who has a higher hand, that person wins the stone.
Right.
So I believe
that
the goal
is then resolved.
Yeah. And I believe the goal is like win 5 stones or 3 stones all in a row.
Yeah.
And there's a, it's really interesting because it's kind of like a meta game. You're trying to figure out like where are the cards that I need? And once you've committed a certain poker hand, you kind of have to run with it. Like if I'm going to do all sevens, I need to find a third seven.
Right.
And like, what if Naveen has it in his hand? What if it's in the deck? So there's a lot of that kind of thing going on. And there's a way in the game where you can win the hand without even finishing out all 6 cards. Right. Like if you can kind of prove that the third card that your opponent needs to win is actually on the table.
Yep. If it's in play.
So there's a lot of that kind of like sneaky play. I know in this version, the game that we've played, it has powers. So I don't know if that was available in Battleline. We've actually never played Battleline. We've only played Shot and Dotten.
I don't know what towers are. I mean, Battleline, if I recall correctly, they're flags instead of stones. But it is still, it's the 9 columns, and you're playing cards back and forth. And yeah, it's still trying to, you know, get a certain number of columns that are adjacent to each other. And it has that, look, I can prove it's impossible for you to win.
Yes.
So I win. All of that stuff is still there.
Yeah. So it has, powers.
You just never sought it out?
No.
Wait, what are towers?
No, powers. So it has a separate deck.
Player powers
that you can choose to, it's like a variant you can choose to use. Yeah, and that makes it more strategic, but also a little bit more chaotic. So kind of like tries to mitigate the luck.
Same is true that a purist would say, no, we never put those powers in. We just play with just the number cards. But if you want to have a more wild and crazy time, you throw in those. Is there a theme to Shot and Totten? Because Battleline makes sense. I mean, it's like Era of Antiquity soldiers, and you're trying to create phalanxes and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't know what a Shotten is, or Totten, for that matter.
I think it's Scottish.
It's got a Scottish theme to it, but I'm not exactly sure what's going on.
Yeah, it's very
loose.
Are there
a lot of sheep?
you're trying to claim, like, mystical stones. So I don't know if it's, like, if there's, like, a lore to it, but it's definitely not as thematic as Battleline is sounding. That sounds a lot more practically thematic, I guess. But
you guys are very abstractish. I mean, it's, I know you said you've only had one so far, but I'd say you've had 3 so far.
Really?
Oh,
abstract games.
Would you? Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a.
All right. And were you guys simpatico on that? You both have equal level 8 love for Shot and Ton.
I would probably have moved it higher on my list.
Higher meaning like closer to 1?
I like it more than, what is this, 8?
Whoa.
This is 8.
Yeah, I like that game a lot. We bring it with us whenever we travel.
It travels really well.
There's like a list of games that we always bring, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
So I would probably have it a little bit higher, but there were some other ones that got in the way, so.
Including that one sitting right next to you.
Got it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. This one
All right.
over here.
Classic. And Shot and Totten, or if you prefer a more militaristic approach, Battleline, I suppose. But I think Shot and Totten has the cooler, more... It's a well-presented game, too, right?
It is,
kind of cute. Yeah, very cutesy.
It's very cute.
All right. All right, well, my number 7 is another relative new one. And again, in part, folks, I may sound like Cult of the New, but remember, I did this list 5 years ago. I had older ones on the old list. I'm doing new stuff now. And my number 7 is Ticket to Ride London. I don't know if you guys have played. There's 2 new Ticket to Rides, New York and London. And the thing about them is that it's 100% the original Ticket to Ride gameplay. But instead of the game taking, 45 minutes to 1 hour and 10, like a regular game of Ticket to Ride, you will easily get this game done in 10 or 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Almost regardless of player count. It's so insanely fast.
Wow.
And I have always held the Ticket to Ride. I mean, it's one of the reasons it's so popular and so universal is because it is a near perfect, flawless game. It is, the epitome of elegance and perfection. Mm-hmm. At least I would have said that until I played Ticket to Ride London. And now I can't even imagine, I couldn't stomach the idea of playing Ticket to Ride because, oh my God, it just never ends. It goes on forever. I mean, it's the same rummy style. You're drawing cards, adding to your hand so you can complete routes on a board. One really cool thing about London is instead of little trains, you're putting double-decker buses, little minis that look very nice.
Nice.
It also adds a new feature that's not in a, it's they're adorable. And we lived in England for years, so we love that. It adds a new feature. There's kind of an area control element in you can score points for completing routes and tickets and all that, like regular Ticket to Ride. But also, if you can get all the connections between a certain number of stops, you control that district. And it's an alternate way you can score points.
Mm.
And to me, that's actually a miracle of design, that they actually take Ticket to Ride, make it more complex, and yet somehow make it a fully fleshed out and very satisfying game that you will get done in under 15 minutes. It's mind-blowing to me how well it scales down. And it only shows me that Ticket Ride should have been a 15-minute game for all whatever 20 years it's been on the market, because it's truly perfect now. And it's my number 7. I've not played the New York one. I hear it's good. Okay. It has an alternative new way besides the districts. But yeah, I mean, we got to have the double-decker buses. It's got to be Ticket to Ride London.
Right.
So, is it all bus routes in the London one, or is there also the tube?
No, it's all bus routes. I mean, they could have easily said it was trains. I mean, if you were to look at it, you'd say, wow, that's just the tiniest Ticket to Ride map I've ever seen. because I think the longest route on the board is 4. And, you know, and that's really weird. Oh, my God, can I actually get 4 cards? And, you know, that's nothing in regular Ticket to Ride, because Ticket to Ride is a long game, and you build up for really big things. Here, just getting up to 4 is a challenge, and everybody's just gobbling up all the 1s and 2s really quick.
Wow.
But, yeah. I cannot recommend it highly enough. My wife and I had long ago gotten way too fatigued of Ticket to Ride Europe, which was our preferred Ticket to Ride, and we got rid of it. We thought, we're never playing this again. And then on a lark, we tried London. We're like, oh my God, this game is amazing. It's always been amazing, but now it's perfect. It's my number 7, Ticket to Ride London.
Awesome.
So does this game this version of it, almost replace the original for you? Like, you'll always
Oh
play?
Gosh, yeah. Okay. You wouldn't, if I have the option, I would happily anytime, anywhere, sit down and play Ticket to Ride London. You'd have to really twist my arm to play Ticket to Ride.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's
fair.
Yeah, that's big time. Awesome. So our number 7 is one that we actually didn't agree on. This is probably our first major disagreement. And it's a roll and write / route builder called Railroad Inc. This is a game that I really enjoy. It just makes me happy. I don't know.
How could there be any disagreement?
I don't know.
What is it, Nadine?
I wasn't sure if we should add roll and writes, because I feel like that's almost its own subcategory.
Roll and writes are perfect for fillers, in my opinion.
They are fillers, though. Yes.
They are the definition, almost always. They are definitely filler games, it's true. I very seriously thought about putting it on my list as well.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay.
It was really close. I have a reason not to, which I'll talk about later.
Okay. But so Railroad Inc. is really fun for me because we're used to playing a lot of roll and writes where you roll, you fill in something or you circle something, but this is a route builder. It's not the first one in its category, but it does it really well.
Yeah,
like,
it does,
There are 2 versions of the game. It comes with like an expansion die, that two of them, I think, per...
Yeah, there's like the red one and then the blue one. The blue one's more friendly, the red one's more deadly.
And you can choose to play with them or you don't have to. And it basically, it's fun to try to figure out how the 2 different types, you have like the railroad and then you have the actual highway. Mm-hmm. And you're trying to figure out how to like intersect them and get them to go where you need them to go in 7 rounds.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's...
Yeah, because every round, you're rolling these customized dice and they tell you, everybody, it's a bingo-y style game.
Yes.
Everybody gets to do these roads, these rails, go figure it out.
Yes. Right. So you're playing with the exact same tools every single time. And you're just trying to figure out how to maximize your area the most. And it's really fun.
What I do like about the game is there is a true best way to play, technically.
There's an answer.
There's a true right answer. Like, when the game is all done, everybody had access to the exact same dice.
Oh.
Everybody had access to the exact same special powers. So who did the best job, basically?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So with the information in that moment, did you make the right decisions?
Right.
You know? So I like that. I do.
Yeah. And it plays so many people or so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That observation makes me have to ask, what is your day job?
I'm a chiropractor.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you want everything clearly delineated in a straight line,
that's right.
Clearly defined, everything in its place.
That's right.
And that's why at the end of a game of Railroad Inc., you can say, yep, that's the correct spine right there.
That's right, exactly.
That's
not looking
a gangly
good.
Mess.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
That's really accurate.
Wow.
That's actually.
That's very true.
Nailed it.
So you just did not want this on the list at all?
Well, I was thinking, do I want to add any Roland rights to this list?
He didn't
because
want
I
this
feel
on
like
list
it's its own like list and category, but you know.
We argued.
A game can be more than one thing.
It can be, that's true.
I put my foot down.
She did.
I said, you can choose the number, but it's going on the list.
I do like the game.
Oh, that was the compromise.
That was a compromise. I do like the game though.
So that means you did put it at 7 though. So you dig it too.
I do. I like the game. I just wasn't sure if we should have Roland rights in this thing, but it is totally a filler, so
I've
learned
the
now.
Errors of my
now.
Way.
And part of it is like
Monique.
We wanted to include titles that we know we play often, and we bring that game with us to very many game nights, so it made sense.
So the true question, as a follow-on to the Shantan versus Battleline, red or blue? You can't say, why not both?
I think I like the blue one just because it's less punishing, I guess.
Yeah.
I like the blue one because of the lakes, specifically. Yeah. I think it's cool to figure that out. But and also, to be fair, we haven't played with the red one a whole lot because it's mean, and we're like typically like introducing it to other players. And they choose the
We should say, not mean to each other. Players aren't mean to each other. It's that the game is mean to the players.
Yes.
Exactly.
Because if meteors strike and volcanoes erupt and stuff like that, and they mess with your plans, basically.
Exactly.
Exactly. It will destroy what you've built up.
I do have to admit, I'm pro red myself.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Although, you know, you guys know, there's now green and yellow coming, right?
I did see that. Did see that. That's exciting.
I know. I don't know what... Yeah, it's crazy. I'm really excited about those two because I do think it's a fantastic game and an excellent choice. And as always, Monique was right.
Thank you.
Keep it on.
All right. Okay, number seven. Excellent. And I think, is that the first game you've talked about that I've actually played? All right.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, well, we move on to number six. This is another new one because, like I said, for me... This was not necessarily the best ones that have ever existed. These are the ones that are my favorite right now. I just thought in terms of, if we had 15 minutes, what would we want to play right now? And what would I want to play most right now? I would like to play some more My City by Reiner Knizia, which is a really interesting one. It is a... it's not a flip and write, because there's no writing. Instead, we have a deck of cards that we go through the cards. It's another bingo-style game. The cards tell us what Tetris-style tiles we can lay to build up our cities onto our own little private grids. And so we might be laying, you know, long, straight industrial buildings or crooked residential buildings or whatever. Once you put one tile on the board, you have to expand from there. This game does a lot of really standard... tiling stuff, a lot of really standard polyomino stuff, but it does it so pure and cleanly and elegantly. I mean, which is what you would expect from Reiner Knizia designs.
Right, yeah.
And we absolutely adore it. I do have, there's one major thing that kept this from my top one, two, or three, because this easily could have been one of the best, period. The interesting thing about My City is it's a legacy game.
Yeah.
And when you first get it, it gives you, I forget, was it 24 sessions you can play through where the rules are constantly morphing and evolving and changing, and new features, new types of tiles, new types of cards, new types of events are getting introduced, but other ones are being removed. And we loved that. And then once you're done, you basically flip your board over and there's like the eternal game, which is you don't have to play any legacy stuff at all. You don't have to put stickers or anything like that. It's just always this mode, and that mode is the equivalent of game or chapter number 4.
The thing is,
chapters 5 and 6 and 7 of the Legacy game introduce so many really cool, amazing, out-of-the-box ideas that so radically change the game. Once you finish the campaign, though, you literally throw all that stuff away. And it's like you go back to a game and it's like stuck in amber in suspended animation forever, like it was somewhere between chapter 3 and chapter 4. And that bugged me, because with a little bit of work, they could have had rules to say, hey, you know what? Every time you make this like chapter 7, or make this like a combination between chapter 5 and chapter 2, because you could mix and match all these different elements, and that would have made it one of the best tile layers of all time. And every opportunity I get, I complain about this vociferously, because I hope Cosmos will release all they need is just a little promo pack of a card randomizer and a set of rules to say, hey, draw these three cards and turn on these three elements.
Oh, I see.
You know, that came from chapters 6, 1, and 2, and you have a unique game. And if that were the case, this probably would have made my number 2 instead of my number 6, My City.
Wow, gotcha. Interesting.
Cool. So yeah, we haven't played this one. Now, is it... You said it's a legacy game, so is it the winner is determined after the 24th game? So you're just keeping score going up?
You have 24 chapters? Is 24 chapters?
There are, if I recall correctly, I think, I might get these numbers wrong. I am prone to goofs. So everybody, maybe there'll be some Klingon subtitles, but if I recall correctly, each chapter you play 3 times, and a game lasts about 15 minutes.
Okay.
And so you get to the chapter, you're introduced to these new rules, some rules get added, and amazingly, you don't see this in other legacy games, some rules get removed. I mean, if you guys have played Pandemic Legacy all the way through, that just game just gets more and more and more and more insanely complex.
Right.
Here, they had the wisdom to add new stuff and remove new stuff. And you're like, I'm really used to that. Oh, it's gone now. And there's this other thing I have to do that changes the game. It's really, really cool. So each chapter, you play three times. You're scoring points every step of the... Or you're winning... And there's always a winner of every single little instance, but you're also at the end of these games scoring campaign points because there will be one winner at the end. Mm. I guess I do have one other complaint because I thought the campaign was great, except for the fact that it's public knowledge how many campaign points everybody has earned as they work their way through the campaign. And Jen and I found when we were near the end, when we were in chapter 6 and there's 7 chapters, or chapter 7 and there's 8 chapters, whatever it is, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We both knew, oh, okay, you just lost that session. That was your last chance. Mm. It is impossible for you to win now. We can see it. So it was kind of anticlimactic.
I see.
And I just wish they would have had the common sense to say, no, keep your points secret. And I mean, you know, because there's no way you can keep track over whatever it is. I think 24 games of how many times you got one or two campaign points. Or it's interesting. If you lose an individual game, you know, the player who wins gets more campaign points. The player who loses gets upgrades to the board to become more powerful. So they are more likely to win in the future.
Oh, okay.
And it works fantastically. I love everything about it, except for the potential anticlimactic, because it could have been secret scoring throughout. And post-game, the eternal game, should use all those assets that just effectively get thrown away. I don't want to say anything. I mean, I've literally got some assets right over there. I found four the other day. And it breaks my heart that I'll never play with that particular thing because that happened from chapters 3 to chapter 6, and then we threw it away.
Oh, but you threw them away.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Well,
yeah.
You put them back in the box because the rules don't support them anymore.
Right.
I see.
And strictly speaking, there are already players who are coming up with their own homebrew variants, saying, okay, here's how you can keep using all this stuff. But for me, it doesn't count unless Reiner Canizia puts his stamp on
it. It has to be official.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So right now, I'm putting it at number 6 based on its strength, just as the Eternal game. If it didn't come with a campaign, it's really a continuation of an older game from Reiner Canizia called Fitz, which was basically his take on Tetris. And he's taken some of those ideas and re-implemented it into a city-building game, and we think it's great. I'd happily play it right now. I've just been talking about it so much. My number 6, My City.
It's awesome.
Cool. Nice.
Cool.
All right.
So you're doing 6?
I'm doing 6, yeah. So our number 6 is...
Well, before you say, I just want to mention that this is probably one of the titles that are pushing that 30-minute mark, I would say.
Oh, you would say?
Maybe. Depending on the group. But go ahead.
It'd be quick. Okay, so this is a game that I think should only be played at its full complement, 4 players.
Mm-hmm.
It is a auction bidding game, and it is called For Sale.
For Sale.
For Sale. Yes.
I got it. Nailed it.
Yes.
Yay.
Yep.
Yep.
For Sale. Yep. So For Sale is a game where you're basically buying real estate in the first half of the game. And now that new real estate that you've just acquired becomes the currency to getting money at the very end when you sell. So it's interesting because at the very beginning, you want to get the best real estate because it's numbered from what, 1 through 30?
I think. And when he says real estate, these are specifically houses.
Yes.
And each card is numbered, I believe it's 1 through 30.
Yes.
And typically the higher the number, it's supposed to be like the more glorious the house. So
it gets pretty ridiculous.
30 is in space.
Yeah.
It's like a space station home. So for the first half of the game, you're trying to bid on these houses, trying to get the highest number house.
The most bang for your buck, basically.
Yeah, the most bang for your buck. So that in the second half of the game, you're selling the houses back. But the way that the auction works for that is interesting. You lay out a certain amount of money cards, depending on the number of players.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might have a round where there are 3 zeros and 1 5. And now you're forced to play that like 30 level house to get a dollar or like $5 or something.
But then the very next turn, it could be the money came out, you know, 8, 7, 6, and you're like, I just spent my 30 on a 5, so I wouldn't take 0, but now I could have spent a 1 just to get a 6.
Because you simultaneously select a house from your hand, and based off of the order and a value of your house, that's how you divvy out the amount of money that's on the table.
Yep.
So it's really fun to try to get like really high numbered valued money for really low numbered cards.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all about timing and like when you play those cards. So that's a really fun one.
Yeah, we like that one.
And it's a Reiner Canizia game too, I believe. It's
is it? Yeah, I actually don't know.
I believe it is.
That's a
and
great
yeah,
one.
I mean, I agree. This is one of those games everybody should play.
Yeah.
You know, it's flawless. It's one flaw. There's no reason to play it as a two-player game, I don't
think. Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's what I said, you the full agree. Compliment. Yep.
You could play it at three. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Three is good, too, but four.
I think it plays more than four, now that I think about it.
Does it play more than four?
I don't remember now.
Okay.
But yes, it's great at four, for sure.
But did I just hear one of you say it's not bad at two?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Agree with you.
Because we're going to have words.
No. I think we said three is acceptable, but four is like where it shines.
Yeah, four and above.
Mm-hmm. Yep. If you're a two-player only gamer and you want something that's kind of akin to it, one of the games that was on my list 5 years ago is Steve Finn's Biblios, which is a very different game, but it kind of has the same vibe in that there's two. There's the first half and then there's the second half, and what you do in the first half informs what you can do in the second half. Mm-hmm. But yeah, for sale, it is one of the epitomes of modern classic. I mean, it anybody who hasn't played it, you have to find a way to play it.
Yeah.
Apparently with four. And no other number is what I hear.
Ideally with four.
Ideally.
Yes.
Yeah. And you guys are both on board with that.
Yes.
You know, at that spot, in your number five, even if it's maybe a little bloated to call a filler.
Yes. 100%.
Does it go beyond 30 minutes? I feel like we can play quick.
I think we automatically figured it was a filler because we had the travel version of the game.
It's
and
so
the
tiny.
Travel version is like this tiny box as opposed to like the bigger.
Yeah.
And so we just saw it on our shelf, and we were like, oh, that's a filler. That's definitely on there.
Yeah. You're like, 45 minutes. Whoa.
Yeah, we agreed, for sure.
I will buy that for $1.
Yeah.
Okay, well, then moving on to my number five is something that's going to make Naveen very unhappy. It's a roll and write. On tour.
I love roll and writes.
Bring it on.
Yeah, on tour, you said?
Yep.
Oh, nice.
On tour.
On tour.
I assume you guys have played on tour, right?
We have played it once.
Only once? Oh,
just
my gosh.
Once.
How could you play it once? You finish it, you immediately play it three more times.
We had demoed it, actually.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Go ahead and let us know more about it, but we'll talk about our experience with it.
I don't get to do this fast. I want to hear about that. yeah, this is a roll and write. It's another bingo-y style game where every round, everybody's trying to make the ideal tour route for your rock and roll band across the continental United States. And we are rolling, there's these really big chunky dice. And if you roll, two D6s and you roll a 7 and a 3, that means somewhere in one of the cities on your board, you have to write the number 73. And on another city somewhere, you have to write a 37. And then the next round, you roll a 16, which means somewhere you put a 16 and a 61, and then a 33, which doubles have special rules and stuff like that. But anyway, after it's all done, you have filled up the map with all these numbers, and whoever has played best has been is able to trace a route along all these cities in ascending numbers. So you are constantly trying to make both short-term and long-term plans, and there's an insane amount of tension, a lot of push your luck that this route is going to be amazing. I'm going to be able to make it all the way up from New England down to Texas, to the Pacific Northwest, and then back over to Montana. This is going to score me so many points, but the only number that can go between Georgia and Texas is a 22 to a 27 because I boxed myself in. And then round after round, that will not get rolled. And you're like, oh, what am I going to do? Oh, please, please. And key to this game, it may sound like, oh, it's just a luck fest, but it's not. Because every time you choose where to put those roll results, you could just be going for that Hail Mary perfect route, which means inevitably it will fail. The dice will fail you. They will leave you high and dry, and you won't be able to finish that route, and you'll score low. Instead, every single time you put these numbers on the board, you have to be thinking about, well, these are, from here, if I put this here, this is three different potential routes I could have at the end of the game. Because I could go up this way, or I could head around over there, and you have to leave all your options open, because the longer the game goes, and there are fewer and fewer places to put these numbers on the board, but and the dice are forever unforgiving. They'll never give you exactly what you want.
That's true.
It's great. It's incredibly fast, incredibly compelling, and it's just a hoot. If people want to try it for themselves, go watch my run-through, because my run-through has links to where you can download and print out a copy of the map, and you can play along with me and Jen.
Cool.
Because it's a bingo-style game, and you can try it for yourself, and I think I can't imagine anybody not liking this game. except for Naveen, apparently.
No. No, I really enjoyed it. Yeah. We just have a very interesting experience with it. So yeah. The only time we ever played it was at a convention called PAX Unplugged in Philadelphia. We played it in December, okay. And we were just walking up and down the demo booths, and I cannot remember the name of the company that does it.
I think it's Tabletoppers.
Yeah, Game Tabletop.
It's Gaming Tabletop.
Yes.
Or Gaming Tables or something like that.
Okay,
it's a company, yeah. They started out making board game tables, and they
right.
still do that,
right.
And they're branching out into making games themselves.
Right.
Okay.
So yeah, we're there, and we see a craps table, full-size craps table. And we go walk up to it, and we look down, and it's on tour, and they're demoing it with these big chunky dice, and you're throwing it on this craps table, and the whole map is kind of out there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's huge. Huge map.
So there's a guy that's playing like the stick man who's like, you know, taking the dice and all that stuff. So that was our experience with it. So I thought it was really, really cool.
Well, but the thing about it is there were a lot of people at the table. And now that you're explaining how to play, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, so that's how you play. Because when he taught it to us, I had no idea what was going on the entire game. And he was very animated, the gentleman who was teaching. I think mm-hmm. his name is Terry. It's funny.
Yes, yep.
It's funny because he actually emailed us recently and was like, oh, I remember you two playing this with me. And I remember one of you didn't get how to play it.
Yeah, I was thinking,
that was me. And the entire time I was just whispering to Naveen, like, what do I do here? Is this right? So you put in both numbers?
Yeah, you put in both numbers one way and the other way.
And then we played
the
entire game.
Time.
Yeah, at the very end, I couldn't draw. I didn't have a path at all. Mm. So I guess that's how you play the game.
Yeah. There you go. You were probably thinking the whole time, should I put a red on 7?
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably thinking craps the whole time.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want to say that.
So it was me, actually. Naveen really loved
it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
he really
enjoyed it. I just didn't understand how to play it.
I actually downloaded the app. I have the app on my phone.
Yeah.
Oh, is there an app?
There's a
digital version of it?
Yeah,
I did not know that.
App. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh. Is it, can one phone work with multiple players? Is it pass around?
I don't know, actually. That's a good question. I've only played
it
solo? By myself, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. Now, here's the thing. I'm going to side with Naveen a little bit with his earlier thing, because here's the deal. The reason that Railroad Inc. and several other amazing roll and writes didn't make my game, this list is, because if I had let... I was afraid I let one in, I got to let them all in, and this would have been 2/3 roll and writes, this list.
That's
and
fair.
I did not want to do that. And so I said, no, I get one. And of all of them, I had to give it to On Tour. But strictly speaking, Railroad Inc., Avenue, or Kodama. You know, there are so many wonderful roll and writes. What's it? Castles of Burgundy, the dice game.
Oh, yeah.
There are so many wonderful, fillery roll and writes, but On Tour is, at this point anyway, still my number one, so that's why it made the list. I would never not play it On Tour. And what about you guys for number five?
So for our number five, so we actually did the same thing where we tried to vary up the list and not let one genre of game kind of, you know, take over the whole thing.
Yep.
So our number five is our trick-taking choice. And it's a game by Ninja Star Games called Yo-Kai Septet. I don't know if it's widely known. I wish I knew that.
Yeah.
But the reason why we...
you guys are...
Sorry?
Yeah, way off. You guys are way out in the weeds.
Yeah.
Yo-Kai
Septet. The reason why we know about it is because the publisher and I believe the designer, or maybe just the publisher, they're local, Ninja Star Games. And so they go to like our local convention. But this game is really fun. It's basically, all of the artwork looks like a Japanese style. And the way that it works is there are 7 different suits, and the numbers of the cards per suit, they kind of...
They stagger. Yeah.
So like one suit might be like 1 through 7. Another suit might be 2 through 8. Another suit, you know, it kind of goes like that. But the one number that they all have in common is 7. And so the way that the game works is it's the same thing in a 3-player game, you do competitive. And in a 4-player game, you do teams. And it doesn't play 2. It's only 3 or 4.
Yep.
But the object
Like most trick takers.
Right.
Like, yeah, exactly. But the object of the game is you're trying to win hands with the 7s in them. They're considered like the boss yokai. That's why it's called Yo-Kai Septet. And so once, depending on the number of players you're playing with, once your pairing, your team, wins like 3 or 4 of these 7s, then you win. But the thing is, if you win 7 hands and you don't hit that goal of 3 or 4 7s in them, then you lose. So it's like a matter of like, we need to win those sevens, but we also don't want to win a whole slew of hands or else we might just lose, you know, without.
Okay. Yeah, so you can force your opponents to lose by winning too many hands, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And it's really interesting, especially in the team game, because you'll do things like, you know you're winning, so I'm the last person to play a card. I'm just going to slip this seven in there because I don't have any cards of the suit that we've just played.
Exactly.
And we can win a seven that way. Or you can try to win several sevens in one hand, depending on how you play your card. So it's really interesting. Really fascinating game.
And, I mean, this, above all other trick takers...
Well, it plays really quickly. So I would say that this is the most filler.
Okay, so as a filler.
Yes, as a filler, it's great.
As a game, just in general, though, like it is, we really enjoy it. And everybody we teach it to really, really enjoys it.
Yes, I would agree with that. It was kind of, we were just debating between this and like The Crew, because The Crew is is so widely loved at this point.
This is,
and we love it as well. But I wasn't sure, we weren't sure if it really, you know, fit the filler genre because of how long you can play it for.
Technically, I guess.
Yeah, you try to sit and play through as many, you know, as many scenarios as you can, and then it becomes like a bigger game. So that was our thinking.
I would like to now retroactively go back to my honorable mentions and include The Crew. Because I fully expected The Crew was going to make your list.
We do love it.
We love
and
it.
Yo-Kai Sceptic killed The Crew for you.
But solely on timing.
Solely on timing, yeah.
But the crew is amazing, and we play that at two. Yeah. Also, the two player variant is probably not as fun as like the higher player counts, but it still works in our opinion.
It does.
It works great.
Yeah. It does.
And how often can you say that about a trick taking game?
Yes.
And it is interesting. I've not played Yo-Kai Sceptic, and because it doesn't support two, so it's crap.
Yeah.
But you know, The Crew, I went back and forth on quite a bit about putting it in, and you actually kind of mentioned it. I didn't quite feel like I should because, yes, ostensibly it's a filler, but it never will be. There is no way you will sit down and not play The Crew for an hour.
Right.
Yes,
totally.
Exactly.
You just won't. It just feels wrong to, okay, well, we'll play it for 5 minutes and then put it away.
It has
play 20 hands.
Yeah, exactly. It has that, like, one more game. Yeah. Keep going. It has that kind of thing going for it, so.
Yep. Yeah, and Yo-Kai, because that's an interesting thing. I mean, The Crew... As a trick taker, as a cooperative trick taker, I don't think is a satisfying and compelling game if you just play one session of it. You have to play a lot to get into a vibe. That's not the case here. This is a trick taker where you're in and out fast and you feel like, yeah, that was a good experience.
Yeah. Yes.
Typically what we find is whenever you're playing with a new player, they'll figure out how to play about halfway through the game, finish it, and be like, okay, let's play one more time.
Yeah.
Let's go one more time. Let's do this whole thing. Yep. And then at that point, you can move on to the next game.
Typically.
But that's how it goes.
Yep. But that is our number five, Yo-Kai Sceptic.
All right. Yes. I think so far, you're 1 in 5 for me, if I recall correctly. But no, this is great. I'm so happy to have you here because viewers on my show are going to hear about a lot of good stuff because you guys know your stuff. You're the Filler Friday people. Okay. Okay. Well, then, moving on to number four. This is a real-time cooperative game. It is the very definition of a filler because you cannot play it for more than 10 minutes because it's Fuse.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yep. And, you know, no setup time, no put-away time. Just get it out, give everybody some bomb cards, and turn on the timer and roll those dice as fast as you can. And everybody is cooperatively trying to defuse a series of bombs by drafting dice from a central pool that gets rolled every round. And maybe I need a red 3, or maybe I just need any kind of red die. Or maybe I need a 3, or maybe I need any die that is green or red from 2 to 5. And anything will do. And whatever. Whatever it is, sooner or later, when that red 3 comes out, chances are Monique needs it too. Everybody needs it. And the tricky thing of this game is trying to balance, right, well, we both need it. Who needs it more? Whose bomb is going to cause us more trouble? Who's going to be stuck longer? Who has alternate ways to go? And you have to make all these decisions in an incredibly pulse-pounding, super fast 10 minutes. It's phenomenal. Such a easy game to teach, up and running, works great at any player count. I've played it at all the player counts at conventions, and Jen and I played it two-player a lot at home. And it's Ken Klenko's masterpiece, really. Mm-hmm. And Ken Klenko has put out a lot of really great games over the last few years, but Fuse is just the bomb. And I didn't even mean for that to be a pun, but it came out that way. Yes, that was totally accidental. I'm sure you guys know Fuse, right?
I know it. I've actually not played it, but
I think every time, might have played it once.
I think you have, yeah. Every time I hear it, I'm like, why have I not played this game?
Yeah.
Because it sounds right up my alley. Cooperative, quick.
Dice chucker.
Making decisions, dice chucking, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's stressful, right? Like, it's
yes,
like,
very, very, yeah,
everybody's
very.
Got their adrenaline going.
I love board game stress. I love board game stress, so yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean that cannot be stressed enough. If you are the type of player who's like, I don't like real time because they're too stressful. I mean, this is, it doesn't get much more stressful than this.
Sure. Right.
You know, so much time and I mean, this game, to be fair, has probably caused me and Jen to get closer to fights over board games than anything else. Just because you're so wrapped up, you're so close, and somebody makes a really bonehead decision, and you know, you can get a little carried away. But I mean, I get that just goes to show just how impassioned of one playing Fuse. But what do you guys have for?
Four. Okay, yeah, for us, four. Okay, so this is
we cheated with this one.
Did we cheat with this one?
100%. This is our longest game on the list.
This is our longest game on the list.
Uh-oh.
But it had to be on the list.
2 hours long.
You're like, it's Lisboa. So it's a game actually that you've mentioned already.
Yeah, I'm a little bit embarrassed. Go ahead.
Oh.
It is Biblios.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah.
It can play Biblios. Along, but it's, oh, it it's can. So good.
It is so good.
Yeah.
That's this Stephen, yep. Dr. Finn's games. This yep. is one that, like, right before we started this, we were both like, oh my gosh, how do we explain how to play Biblios? How do we explain it? Because it's so, it's played just like For Sale in the sense mm-hmm. that there are two phases.
Yeah.
But the whole premise of this game is you have this, like, value board in front of you, and you're trying to win certain suits of cards, and the suit values are represented by these dice, mm-hmm. and they just tell you basically how many points they're all worth, you
at know, the end of the game. Game. Yeah.
But there are certain cards that can change the values. It can make it go up or down.
Yep.
And so over the first half of the game, you are trying to take cards into your hand, and you're also divvying cards out to other players so you could see mm-hmm. which suits other players are getting.
Right.
But you're also secretly yep. putting a card out into the auction for the yes. second half of the game, where you use your money cards to bid on those cards.
And at the end of the day,
yeah, at the end of the day, you're just trying to have the majority of cards, card values in your hand for the different suits
yep.
to try to claim yep. those dice. And whoever has the most points wins. And usually scores are like 7 points.
Yeah, yeah, it's real tight.
It's like the lowest scoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, but, I got 6, you got 5. Okay.
Yeah. But it's yep. excellent. Yeah. There's just enough of like bidding, luck, bluffing.
Player interaction is there.
Yeah, player yeah. interaction. You never know who is going to decrease the value of the suit that you're going for or...
Yep.
You're trying to
because they know you're going for it.
They know yeah. it, yeah.
Yeah, and then there is a piece of paper or something on the inside cover of the box that shows you all of the numbers, the quantities
the
of cards, the distribution
yeah.
for each suit. Mm-hmm. So you're card counting at the same time, and you're mm-hmm. thinking, oh gosh, I think Naveen is secretly hiding a majority of these colors.
Yeah.
I should abandon them and try to tank his die.
Right, right.
that's pretty much how he is. Yeah. But it yep. does play a little bit yep. longer. It's not a 20-minute game. But
it was on my list originally because it works great as a two-player game, and it is mm-hmm. definitely you know under 20 minutes as a two-player, you know for both halves because it just particularly once players know what they're doing, but even
right.
first-time yes. players I think.
Right.
And yeah, it's amazing. Just and you guys both agreed putting it right here at number four.
Yeah.
How's that?
Your only
really
concern was
it, so.
That it takes too long. Mm-hmm. I've only played it at higher player counts once or twice. And does it go up into 30s and 40 minutes at that point?
It can, it can go into like 40 minutes, especially because, there's a little bit of analysis paralysis.
Because it doesn't matter how many players, you're going through just as many cards, mm-hmm. right?
But you're deciding which cards to give to who? Oh no, you're deciding which cards are going to go in the auction,
yeah,
which
you're
one you're
going to
keep, and then the rest of them go out for everybody else. So
then just select.
That decision making can take a little bit longer. And then you have more players to go
around. Oh, because you have more... Yeah. As opposed to with it's just three players. Hey, here's the one I'm giving. Here's the one I'm giving to you. And here's the one I'm trashing.
That
basically,
you're, yeah,
right.
You're exactly.
Banking it till later.
And then the actual auction takes a lot longer because you're going around more people in the second half of the game.
I suppose so. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And the last time we
then I will strike it from your list.
Yeah.
Unless you only play it two.
The last time we played it was with my parents also. So sometimes they're a little slower when we play. So
oh,
I think
we have
that's
to
the
remind them.
Remind them.
Like, no, you have to keep one.
Yeah.
Put one in the auction stack.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that's why we're thinking.
Did they dig it?
They did.
Oh,
they loved
it.
Oh, my. That
it.
Was one my dad was like, let's play it again.
I think
let's
we might have played it three times
yeah.
that night. They loved it so much.
They are not board game geeks.
They are not. Mm-mm. No. But we did give them a Jaipur for a holiday one time.
So we're crossing our fingers.
We're trying to get them into it.
Yep. Jaipur made my first filler list, when I did it 5 years ago. Yep. It kind of got replaced by Angkor for this one. Because actually, I forgot to mention, my number 10, Angkor, is from the designer of Jaipur.
Oh, no way.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's neat.
So, anyway. Let's see. So that was your number four.
That was number four.
Excellent choice. And yes. I guess, strictly speaking, that's our first overlap. If you consider me doing a top 20.
20, yeah.
That's true.
Wow. All right. Everybody knows that must be the one. Although maybe it won't be our last. Okay. And then we move on to number three. Number three.
Yep.
This is another newer one because, again, I'm all about new stuff in this list. Mandala. I don't know if you guys played it.
I've seen the box art. It looks awesome just by the box, but I don't know much about it.
I haven't played it.
It is a gorgeous two-player only game.
Oh, cool.
And it kind of has battle-line-y, shot and tot-y type feel because either of us are standing on the opposite side of a line, and we are playing cards either to the center of the line or to our side of the line to try to get area control because we're playing cards to the center, and that actually determines what we're fighting over. We're not just fighting over stones. We're fighting over the pots that we're creating by playing cards into the line, but we're also playing on cards on our side of the line to have majority for when that eventually scores.
Mm.
And that's the heart of it. But the thing that makes this game excel for me and Jen, because we're Care Bears, we don't really go for just trying to ruin, stop each other.
Yeah.
The thing is, that pot, when it's eventually revealed that, whether I won it or Naveen won it, through smart play, and the whole thing doesn't just go to him. He gets first dibs. He takes some stuff from it, and then I take some stuff from it, and then he takes some stuff from it, and I take some stuff from it. And that extra little step adds so much to the game. Because I might be putting stuff in that pot solely because I know, Naveen's probably going to win that pot. And I know he's not going to want this. And I would like to score this.
Nice.
And so I'm just going to throw this in here because he's probably going to win it next turn and I'll be able to get that when we draft the rewards out of it. Because the theme is we are all Buddhist monks communally creating these beautiful mandalas. And actually, even though it's a very abstract game, the designers and developers did a good job of, in the rule book, of making the story and the reality of real-world mandalas, which are these beautiful, sand paintings that they work for years on, they complete it, and then they just wipe it all away, and the sand goes into the river as a representation of life and death and rebirth cycles and all of that. And thematically, that stuff is actually worked into the game in nice little subtle ways. I appreciate that it elevates it above most abstracts, but really, more than anything else, it can be a fairly tight cutthroat battle. Trying to get that pot. I never expect to get that pot. I was just waiting for it so I could get out of there I want. But the thing is, if you get first dibs, you might take that thing that I want, even though that card is worth 1 point to you and it's worth 6 points to me. Are you okay? Then I'm going to take all those cards you put in that you wanted.
Wow.
So I mean, it can have a lot of. It has a ton of depth. Incredibly sharp game. And it came out, I think, at Essen last year. And I don't really think it's caught on very well. And it's a shame because I think it was in my top 10 of the year. That's really saying something for a quick little filler two-player only game that's largely abstract, but it's amazing. I think you guys will love it.
Wow.
And you'll never play Shot and Totten again.
We'll have to hunt that one down.
Mandala.
Mandala. Yeah.
Mandala. It's interesting. So very meta, it sounds, right? Like you're very like getting into each other's heads.
Oh, almost. Gosh, yes. Yeah.
That's gotta be our favorite.
Always, the number of times, tell me what cards you have. Yeah. I need to know what is in your hand. it's incredible. Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice.
Cool.
Awesome. So that was number three.
That was three. Yeah.
Three. Okay. So our number three is similar in the sense that it is a game where you're trying to get into each other's heads.
Yes.
But it's a two-player exclusive, and a lot of these are card games if you haven't noticed, because we really enjoy card games for fillers. It's called Hanami Koji. This is an Emperor S4 game. I believe it's been kind of like...
I do know this one. I think I know this one. Go on.
I think it's been re-illustrated into Jixia Academy.
Yes.
But it's essentially the same game. And so the way that it works is there are geishas all lined up in the middle of the table. I don't remember how many there are.
Yeah.
But it's very simple. You have a hand of cards and you have four actions that you can do on your turn, and you must do all four of them by the end of the round. You're basically going to choose one, flip over the tile that signifies the action, and then the other player goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the types of actions you're taking are like I split, you choose kind of mechanisms, where you're putting, you either keep one and you remove it from the game, or you put a card from your hand face down to score later, or you take four cards, you split them up into two pairs, and you allow your opponent to choose a pair and you to choose a pair. Because what you're essentially doing is you're trying to win the favor of these geishas by having a majority of their specific card types on your side of the line by the end of the round. Mm-hmm. So, and whoever has, I believe it's whoever wins like four geishas favor or like a certain number
of points, the value. Yeah, because each geisha has a certain value. So you're basically trying to protect against, you know, giving away high valued geishas, but then you also don't want them to get a bunch of small ones.
Right.
So it's
like really mentally clever. Tactical because there's a lot of like trying to guess, okay, what card does he have in his hand? There are three cards of this type of suit in this deck. I already have two of them.
Mm-hmm.
If I keep one and secretly hide it for the end of the game, Naveen will never know I had that one,
right,
and I can win a majority of that card. So there's a lot of that like mental tactical gameplay. And same thing, it's a small box, really easy to bring around when you travel. And that's probably our favorite travel filler.
That probably
maybe.
Is, yeah.
As Besides our number one. Excellent choice, yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually played this once.
Just once.
Paulo, the guy who does my goof checking on my videos, lives in Portugal. There was one time I was visiting him and he wanted to play it because he loves it. And I played it once. It was late at night and somehow I won. And that means I can never play it again because I'm on an all-time high. But yeah, I mean, so much of that game. You're right, there's card counting and, and there's double guessing and bluffing. But it's so much about anticipating what do they value. You know, and you know, it's not playing the game, it's playing the player.
Exactly.
That game,
yes.
100%.
Exactly.
And I know that one's, you know, unlike some of these we've decried, oh, it's a real shame, it's kind of flown under the radar. I know this game got a lot of attention because Sam Healy of the Dice Tower raved about it for years and gave it a really high profile. I think this is one of Emperor's Four's biggest games, and good reason. I probably should cover it on my channel someday, but I know the thing is, actually, it's the kind of game Jen would normally win, but again, I'm better at anticipating her.
Oh.
Maybe I'd do better against her than I think now that I know
that'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, an excellent choice. And you guys are both putting it at the top of your list, right?
Yeah, we really enjoy that.
That's there, for sure.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And how do you say it again?
Hanamikoji?
That's how we say it. Now I'm worried that's not how you say it. But that's how we've been saying it. Hanamikoji.
Hanamikoji.
Hanamikoji? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. That was number three.
All right. Well, number two. Almost there. And you know how we were talking about earlier, you know, that I didn't want to make my list just dominated by one style. You know, we were talking about Roll and Writes.
Uh-huh.
And so, I'm only giving myself one. There was one other type of genre that has really exploded recently that has a lot of great fillers that I really love, and the list could have dominated it as well. And I said only one, and that's the card patching, which I talked about earlier with Cafe, and I couldn't do it. I have two of them. Two is Circle the Wagons. Circle the Wagons is amazing. I don't know if you guys have played it.
I've not heard of it.
I
don't know this one.
Yeah.
Oh, the name of the publisher, it's I want to say Buttonfly Games or Small Button Games. They are a publisher that is dedicated to keeping alive the micro game concept. That this entire deep, rich, fulfilling game is just a deck of 14 or 15 or 13 cards.
Oh.
And that is what Circle the Wagons is. There's nothing to it. It is a wisp of nothingness, and yet it is so incredibly rich and deep. All the cards are two-sided. One side is grids, like Honshu cards or Cafe cards, and you know, players are taking turns drafting those cards, you know, adding their tableau, you know, covering up some things to replace other things to create patterns. Like I talked about, Cafe is about creating patterns. Circle the Wagons is very much about creating patterns.
Mm.
The brilliant thing about this, the cards are two-sided. The other side of every card is a very wildly unique in-game scoring mechanism, or, you know, a target for you to hit. And as part of setup, you shuffle up this deck of whatever it is, 13, 14 cards, take three of them, flip them face up. Those are the three objectives you are going to play this time. And every time you get three different ones, and it makes the game feel so radically different from game to game. It's just mind-boggling to me just how much mileage they get out of this. And actually, it's interesting. It has a sister product called... not Urban Sprawl, because that's not a filler.
Oh, Sprawlopolis. That's
Sprawlopolis. Thank you. Okay. Yes, yeah. Sprawlopolis. Yeah, have you played Sprawlopolis?
I don't. We played Tussie Mussie. Which is by the same Button Shy, right?
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yes.
They do those wallet size games.
Yeah.
It's their wallet game line. Yep. And Tussie Mussie is another one. It's and this is the same form factor. Sprawlopolis is basically the same game as Circle the Wagons, except it's about city building instead of, you know, American West tableau building, and it's cooperative instead of competitive. And actually, you would think, considering me and Jen, we'd like the cooperative one better. And, you know, and Sprawlopolis is great, but the competitive element of Circle of Wagons is just, it is just phenomenal. And is it the best card patching game? It is certainly one of the fastest. It is definitely a filler. And like I said, I set out saying, you know, I'm not going to have more than one of any type of game, but it's so good. I had to break my rule, and I have two of them. It's my number two, Circle the Wagons.
Nice. Neat. Okay. Yeah, we'll have to hunt that one down.
Yeah. When did that one come out?
You have to.
Is that a fairly recent?
It actually came out several years ago.
Okay.
Like, I want to say it's like 2017 or something like that. And again, it was that same little wallet format. But then last year, I believe, I forget who, I want to say Quinned Games, which is a European publisher, they picked up the rights to make a boxed version of it. And it's still the same little, whatever, 14-card game, but it comes in a nice little box that could still fit in your back pocket. And I think they redid the art a little bit. So it got kind of like a deluxified version, I guess, of a micro game. But either way, however you can get it. I mean, just go to Button Shy does direct sales on their site.
Oh, cool.
They are the epitome of small little indie. Look, we're just doing this for love. And you know, I think maybe even print them on demand, or but I'm not sure.
Wow.
But seek it out; it's incredibly cheap. You'll have it in a few days, and you'll never want to stop playing it because it's my second best filler of the moment.
Wow.
Circle of Wagons.
Cool.
Yeah. You will not regret it.
Circle of Wagons.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Nice.
Cool. And that was number two.
That was two. Yeah.
Two.
So towards the end here. Okay, so this is another card game. This one has
they're all card games.
Alice in Wonderland themed game, and it is called Parade. Are you familiar with Parade?
One? Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
I've seen it. Okay. I think it has a Cheshire Cat on there.
Yeah, the purple box, Cheshire Cat. Uh-huh. Yeah. And in this game, it is another one of those games where you want to score the least amount of points, and you want to get rid of your hand, basically, by playing cards to this line of cards called the Parade. And depending on which cards you play, determines which cards you must take out of the Parade line and then be part of your scoring tableau. And ultimately, in the end of the game, like I said, you want to score the least amount of points. So there is a lot of hand management and that parade manipulation, and you're trying to force, you know, your opponents to score points when you're just kind of sitting back and you know, playing certain cards.
Yeah, it's a thinky filler. Like those are our favorite types of fillers, the ones that kind of involve you like pretty intensely
from the beginning to the end.
So there's always this parade that keeps getting longer and longer, and the parameters for taking cards out of the parade are like, if you play a card to the end of the parade that has the same suit as certain cards, you have to take them out, and taking them out is a bad thing because it goes into your scoring pile. If you play a card, I believe that's higher.
Yes.
Or no, you want to play higher cards.
Right.
Because if you play, say, like a six, you're going to count backwards in the parade up to six spots, and those six cards are safe. So say if you have like a parade that's like seven in length and you put a 10 at the end, nobody leaves the parade because a certain amount of them are safe. So there's an amount of trying to figure out on your turn, if I play this card, how many of those cards are going to leave the parade and come into my scoring, into my scoring area. But also, taking cards is not necessarily a bad thing, because whoever has the most number of cards of one suit at the end of the game gets to flip them all over, and now they're only worth 1 point each, as opposed to taking the sum of the values of the cards.
Right.
And so so once like somebody is forced to take like
and
a
that's
high
for each suit,
six suits total. Yep.
Yeah, six suits total.
Okay.
And
okay.
So once like somebody is forced to take some cards, and now you're forced to take cards of the same suit as them, it becomes a competition of who can have the most number of cards of that suit.
Yeah, it's like now I'm willing to get
and whoever fails
more
at that ends up scoring a lot of points.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a lot of like that's upside clever down thinking. Whenever you're playing. So it's another one of those games where it kind of takes a game for you to figure out the rules of like when you place a card, which cards come out. But once you figure it out, it's really, really fun. Yeah.
And it does play well at two.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like it would be a good two-player game.
It does play well at two.
Yeah. We don't play it often at two because I think we prefer it at higher play. I think it can play up to six.
It can play up to six, yeah.
And
which is a little too much.
It just becomes
much
longer.
The control is a lot less, yeah.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, but it's interesting because at the very end of the game, after you play a card, you're supposed to draw another card up. And so at the end of the game, one of the cards in your hand is going to go out, and the rest of the cards in your hand must go into your scoring pile.
Mm-hmm.
So you can withhold. So say if Naveen and I both tie in blue, I can withhold a blue card in my hand and just plop it down at the very end of the game, and now I have the majority.
Exactly, yep.
And Naveen didn't know that. So there's a lot of interesting kind of logic to this
game. At the very end of the game, you'll have four cards left over. Two of them are you're just going to discard and toss them out.
Oh, it's two.
And two,
okay.
You must score.
Yes.
So that's where it's like, okay, Monique has two blue, I have two blue, and I'm holding on, out of my four cards, I'm holding on to two blue.
Yes.
So maybe I'll just keep the two blue and then force her to score all her blues out there. So,
horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible tactic. Naveen likes that.
Yeah, I love that.
His favorite tactic. Yeah.
So that's
that is number two. So
that's
Parade, yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
No, that sounds great. And I have to admit, I am confused now. Going all the way back to your honorable mention, if Naveen can handle all of this stuff, how he can't handle Rival Realms.
Fantasy Realms.
Yeah. I know.
Fantasy Realms.
That is my sentiments exactly.
I don't know what it is. When I play that game, I'm just not enjoying myself for some reason.
You know what it is?
I don't know what it is.
I think he's good with cards that have numbers, but as soon as we have cards that have just like a slew of text, where like the text really matters in terms of your scoring, I think that's where you get overwhelmed.
Yeah, all those special abilities and stuff.
Yeah. Because on these Fantasy Realms cards, it's like, oh, you get 50 points off the bat, but if you have a wizard and a flood and a fire, then it's like nullified.
Yeah. And I'm like, but so, I need that for this other card, so do I bail on this card?
Ah. And then it always ends up like, oh, I didn't realize I had the flood in my hand, so now all of my cards are zero for him.
Yeah, I just don't put it all together, I guess.
That's where that happens.
So it's when Naveen is playing all of these other games you're talking about, you can imagine Beautiful Mind style, all the numbers
around
his head.
Exactly.
But numbers, then when words start coming in, it all gets jumbled up and it falls apart.
I'm like, no, right. No.
There's a purity to that. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, cool. I have heard nothing but great things about Parade for a long time. It's definitely one I would give a try, and all the more so now.
Yeah, and it was all actually out of print for quite a while.
Is it hard to get?
I know. I think now it's in
bad.
Print, but for a while it was out of print. So we were like traveling everywhere trying to find this game, and they finally re-released it. So it should be easy to get.
Yeah, it's from Z-Man.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. From Z-Man. Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. Well, my number one, we've made it here to the end, is Jump Drive from Tom Lehman.
Interesting.
And I mean, you know, some people think it would be blasphemy to refer to Jump Drive over Race for the Galaxy, because Jump Drive is basically Race for the Galaxy, which some people would say is the greatest modern designer card game of all time, and I'd have a hard time arguing with that, but kind of stripped down to the bare core. It is an incredibly fast game that is easily under 15 minutes because it's 100% simultaneous play. It's like Race for the Galaxy multi-use. I've got a handful of cards. I want to play all of them to help build up my galactic civilization, but I can't. I have to discard some cards to play other ones, and I've got to find synergy between the cards I play. And at the end of every round, after everybody's played their cards, all the cards they've played generate points and more cards that they'll be able to get. And that tough balance, because this game on average is going to last, I forget, maybe something like 7 rounds, and these are very quick rounds. It's easy to finish this game in 10 minutes from start to finish. And yet you feel like in those 10 minutes you have done so much. You started from nothing to creating this amazing epic empire that spans the stars and can do so much stuff. And what's so compelling about it is it's not like, hey, I put the stuff down and then it just scores me once. Everything I put down, it compounds. They keep on scoring every round. So you're basically, getting back to where I was earlier, you're effectively building an engine. Mm-hmm. Every card you put out, but it is an engine that runs at peak efficiency every round once you get it set up. So, it starts out slow, but by the third round, there are players, and I forget what we're racing to. We're racing to like get 50 or 60 points, something like that. And, in round two, everybody, we're all sitting at 8 or 10 points. But then just three rounds later, I got to 100.
Right.
And this logarithmic explosion as these cards you get, and they start combining with each other in really cool and incredibly thematic ways. The antithesis of your entire list, this game to me feels very, very thematic because of the way they all interlock. And maybe it won't work for Naveen because it's a lot of text.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you guys have played this. You probably played Race for the Galaxy, I bet, at the very least, right?
So we have it, but we haven't played it.
Yeah, it's on the shelf of shame.
Perpetually, I know.
Drop everything.
You have Race for the Galaxy on your shelf.
I know.
And you have not played it.
It's perpetually on our shelf of shame. We'll pull it out this weekend.
Folks, in the comments, please correct them on this course of action.
Yeah, we need to play it.
People are going to hunt you down.
I know.
You have to play it. And it is. It's with good reason. But the interesting thing is, I mean, it's a very complex game. And it does have a fairly steep learning curve. It is a deep pool to dive into. And Jump Drive is the kiddie pool version of it, where you're just up and running super fast, incredibly compelling. And if you don't like science fiction, fortunately, there's an alternate game that I could have put into my number one as well, again from Tom Lehman, called The City. It uses the same core pay cards, discard cards to play other cards. As you build more cards, they give you more points and more cards every round. But it's about modern day city building and finding synergies between businesses and car traffic and suburbs rather than military conquest of space planets and stuff like that.
Right.
And they have the same core DNA. They do feel different. The way you're trying to do the same thing, you use the same mechanisms, but the two games. If anything, I'd say Jump Drive is the more complex one. The City is a bit more streamlined and certainly more approachable. But they're both great. And it's, again, the number one thing about both of them, you feel like you have done an amazing thing. You have made an incredible metropolis that's really strongly thematic. Yeah, my metropolis is all about this particular type of building and how we've been able to ride it to success, or a space empire with the same end result. And I love them both. Take your pick, Jump Drive or The City.
Now,
what do you guys have number one?
Are they pretty they're pretty different? Like, they're different, because I thought, I was under the impression that they were like a direct implementation or retheming, but they're pretty different, you say?
They follow the core rules are exactly the same. You've got a hand of cards. This card, it says you have to discard three cards, and when you put it into play, it'll start making you 2 points and let you draw one card every turn.
Right.
Oh, and by the way, it has some text that will define how it will interact with other types of cards.
Right.
So I just described both games. 100%. And the only difference is, when I say there's text on the card that defines how it interacts with other cards, that is radically different. Because The City is, I would say, closer to kind of like a set collection game.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing all this stuff to build sets of things that really work well together.
Whereas
Jump Drive, you are playing cards that have actions that let you do different things. And so it's... You know, it is like saying, well, Bridge and Hearts, aren't they pretty much the exact same game? Well, if you want to break it down, you could describe them in various... But then when you're actually playing them, they do feel different. And I think it has that kind of a difference. I own them both. I think they're both fantastic.
Okay.
If I had to pick one, I would pick Jump Drive because I like science fiction. But The City is equally satisfying to play as well.
Awesome. Yeah, so we've played The City specifically. We actually covered it on our channel as a part of like the Filler Fridays. And he's really good at it for some reason. And it's like cards that have text. So
you got to get that income.
Conundrum.
Income early.
Yeah, that income.
Yeah.
That's where I fail.
Yeah. Well, then you know, if you played one, you don't necessarily have to seek out the other. It's almost like you could think of, now that you know The City, and I assume you liked it.
Yeah, it's fun.
You had to like it, right? Because it's awesome. If you play Jump Drive, it'll almost feel like, well, it's because it's in outer space. It feels different. You do the exact same thing. You know the rules of how to play. But what those cards tell you to do will be very different. The easiest example is, in City, it's all about just discarding cards to build new cards and then finding synergies between those cards, trying to find the right cards. In Jump Drive, yes, a lot of cards, I just discard cards to play. But other cards, I don't discard to put them in play. I have to have military, which means I had to have built military things that let me settle these other planets for free. And so there's these extra twists that it adds to the formula that makes it feel unique.
That makes sense. Oh, interesting.
And so this is the same designer as Race for the Galaxy.
So I guess he designed all three.
Which you must hang up after this and play immediately.
Yeah, okay.
We will. We're going to pencil it
in. When we did My City, we got some comments about Race for the Galaxy.
So now it's
all coming together and making sense. Okay.
Cool. That's your number one.
Yep.
Number one, yeah.
Of all of them, number one. Okay, so yep. Our number one mm-hmm. is also a card game, and this is a mix between like memory, there's bluffing, there's card exchange, but it's all very fast, and it's called Cabo. I believe it's released by Bezier Games.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And this
Bezier Games.
Yeah, this game has to be our most played game
ever,
of all time.
Probably,
ever.
Yeah.
Because
really,
probably it plays so quickly, especially at two. I would say two is probably my favorite version of the game
mm-hmm.
because it's very. It becomes very another like mentally tactical game because it's a mix between trying to remember which four cards you have in front of you and trying to swap out a majority of them to try to have the lowest score because eventually that is your goal. Mm-hmm. You want to have as close as zero as possible in front of you by the end of the game.
Right. Okay.
So we will literally come home and at the end of the night say, okay, we're going to have a little tournament here. Cabo tournament. Best of three.
Best
of five. We don't even play by the rules anymore. We're not keeping track of score. We're just going to see how many
can
you win.
Who won that game. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We've introduced this game to his parents, his dad especially.
My dad loves that game.
We brought it over to his place and I think we played 15 times.
Probably back to back.
Yeah. Because he just kept wanting to go over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a game that plays up to four, but at higher player counts, mm-hmm. the luck factor becomes much higher, I believe.
Yeah. Have you played it, Rada?
Okay. I have always dismissed it out of hand. I have had more than one opportunity to play it, and I've heard great things, and I've always said no because I hate memory in games.
Oh.
How big is the memory element?
It's, you know,
because you said
four,
I have four face down cards in front of me, and
face
I can't
down.
Look at them?
You can look at the two of the four to very start to, at the very start of the game.
There's quite a bit of memory.
There's quite a bit of memory in the sense that things will get swapped in and out. But if you can just kind of, you know, remember, okay, this is my four, this is my six, this is my eight. You know, as cards start getting moved around, if you haven't been messed with, then it's not too bad.
Yeah, you're only remembering the four cards in front of you. And mm-hmm. then as the game progresses, you have an opportunity to swap them out, like with cards from the deck or with other players. And so you'll potentially have less than four cards in front of you. So you're really only trying to remember which cards you have.
Mm-hmm.
And you can try to remember, because there are like three different powers in the game. One power allows you to peek at your own card, whichever one you want. Another power allows you to spy at another player's card. So if you want to try to remember that one, that you can. So like if Naveen happens to have a zero in front of him and I spied that and I was able to gather that information in the future, I can play the third power, which is swap, and swap my 13 out for his zero.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the time that you want to remember
if he has
that card.
Yeah.
But you know, as you play the game, some of these cards start getting turned face up. And so the memory part decreases.
It's not super taxing on your brain, like trying to remember, you know, which cards are which.
Yeah.
So it's fun. It's very, very fun. And another small box game. It's been re-implemented a few times.
Mm-hmm.
And with more powers, I believe like the Silver series is the same concept of the game, but with like a ton of powers. But over and over again, we feel like the original Cabo is the best one.
Mm-hmm.
Simple is better.
We've probably played it over 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can confirm. I mean, that game has so much love. I've heard nothing but great things from Scott Alden, the head Board Game Geek,
mm-hmm.
about it. He raves about it. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe someday. I'm just like, you know, memory. Oh.
It plays well at
so
two.
You guys really dig memory in games.
It plays
and to
two.
Be fair, I mean, I'd say that's a consistent conceit through all your stuff. I mean, to play almost all the games you talked about, it is card counting and memory and anticipation
mm-hmm.
and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So you're, okay, well, I know you're a chiropractor. Monique, what do you do?
I'm a nurse practitioner. So we both work in healthcare.
So you are both very scientifically minded.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys both have jobs that require keeping a lot of knowledge at the forefront that you have to deploy at any given time.
Absolutely.
So that makes some sense to me then, that your brains are wired for these sorts of things.
Yeah, I think I would agree.
Yeah.
That's probably where we get the most joy, when we have to kind of hold on to things mentally, I guess.
To crunch it all. And
for sure.
Second guess.
And you can't crunch letters. That's the problem. There you go.
That's true.
Well, that makes sense then. So that's it, folks. That was a top 10. And wow, I mean, I expected there was going to be a little bit more crossover.
But
now, if I knew more about you at the beginning, I probably would have said, they're going to be in a whole different world. But I mean, from the ones I've heard of, I do know those are really great. I'm surprised. Did you guys consider Lost Cities?
Yes, that it's in our collection. We have it. For some reason, I don't know why we didn't choose it.
Honestly, I forgot about it.
I would assume Shot and Taunton killed it, right?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. That might have been the exact reason why we didn't choose it.
To be honest, if I had remembered, it would probably...
Oh,
it'd
be
I would
in
probably
there
would have strong-armed that one.
Yeah, we really
Oh, really?
That. Yeah, I really love that game. I forgot about
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah, but that's a really, really good one. Is that another Reiner Knizia
that
game?
Is
yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah, that one's fantastic. Yep. And we both... wholeheartedly agree on that one, right?
Yeah, the way the scoring works in that game.
That's actually one of the first games we've ever played when getting into the hobby.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
We did. We put a demo shelf at our local gaming store.
Yeah. So that one's fantastic. Do you play that one a lot as well?
My wife would happily play that anytime, day or night. And I think we've probably played that 30 some times. Mm-hmm. I've won maybe twice. That game is so demoralizing to me. I can't grok it. It's my fantasy realm for some reason.
And the worst part is when you're getting multiples of your negatives.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yeah.
The worst part.
It is brilliant. It's too brilliant for me is basically what it boils down to. So we'll give it an honorable mention on your list then as well, but only because you forgot.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you filled your brains too much with medical stuff and remembering what four cards are in front of you, which is really what you guys are all about.
Four cards. Gotta have them.
Well, cool. Cool. That was awesome. I'm really impressed by that list. I mean, I was worried there was going to be, we were probably six or seven the same because, you know, there are so many. And then when I found out, they're not doing the crew. Okay, I don't know where they're going. It was awesome having you guys on.
Yeah,
and
thanks for having us.
Like I said right up front, folks, if you'd like to see more of them, you can hit that I in the top right corner screen or follow the links down in their show notes to Before You Play. Why is that the title of your channel?
Oh, the concept originally was that we were just going to teach how to play a lot of games, mm-hmm. but suddenly it morphed into playthroughs. But it's still pretty much the same concept. The idea is we want to help facilitate learning of the game before you even try it. Mm-hmm. So you have an idea of what to expect.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So lots of back and forth.
And we are recording this. We're recording this on a Friday, aren't we?
Today is Friday. Yes,
today is Friday. I've lost track of time as well.
Yes.
It's all one long day, you know. But
what is your it's just one long parade.
Yeah, it's true.
What is your filler Friday for tonight?
Tonight we're probably gonna take a break.
Yeah, I think we're doing a break.
We've had a very taxing 2 weeks, so we're gonna kick back and plan the one for next week.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're not consistently doing it every single Friday. It's kind of we're littering it in there. We know some Fridays here and there, so every once in a while we'll take a break from it. But
our next week is probably going to be a game called Noctiluca, mm-hmm. which I don't think is pitched as a filler Friday, or as a filler, I guess. But when we play it too, it plays so quickly. So
definitely. Mm-hmm. That's a good little game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's a Z-Man title, so it's very cute.
Yeah,
very beautiful.
It's so pretty, so pretty. Folks, then do not miss it. again. Subscribe to them and watch that Noctiluca. Actually, because honestly, if Jen were in here and we, like you guys, if Jen and I had to do a combined, Noctiluca might have made hers.
Oh, wow.
She loves
that. Oh, cool.
That's neat.
Yeah.
That's
a good
one.
Yeah. All right, folks. And all right, Monique and Naveen, it's been fantastic. And thank you. You've convinced me not to play some games. But you have definitely, I mean, I really do have to go out and play the geisha gifts game again.
Oh, Hanamakoji.
Hanamakoji.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because that was brilliant when I played it with Paolo. And I am being unfair to Jen because she will love that game to death.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot about it until you reminded me of it just now.
Oh, good.
So, and hopefully you folks got some good ideas as well.
Yeah, totally.
Because really, my list, most of my viewers probably could have guessed when it falls. But
absolutely.
That's it, folks. Thanks everybody for watching, and thanks for setting the time in the afternoon. And I'm sorry to anybody who was hoping for a filler Friday tonight because I've exhausted them. Talk to you all later, everybody.
Thank you.
So long. Bye bye. Frozen smile, and we're done. Okay, now
Yay!
The moment of truth: hitting stop and making sure the machine doesn't crash.